You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I saw it coming. I knew that Kim Davis was going to be America's most famous persecuted Christian lady martyr bigot. When the story first broke, months and months ago, when Kim Davis, in June, refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples as the county clerk, elected county clerk in Rowan County, Kentucky, I knew how this was going to play out. We'd seen with the pizza parlor owners who refused to cater a gay wedding. Not that anyone ever had actually asked them to cater a gay wedding, but they refused preemptively to cater any gay weddings. And then somebody said something mean about them on Yelp and they closed their pizza parlor. And sweet, sweet bigot money rained down on the owners of that pizza parlor. $1 million was raised online from gullible rubes to make them feel better about being anti-gay bigots that someone said something mean about online. That's what Kim Davis's goal was all along. I saw it coming, that when she said she wasn't going to issue those licenses, I knew what was going to happen. There would be court cases. She would defy court orders. She would defy ultimately the Supreme Court of the United States, and then she would be held in contempt of court and sent to prison. And then marriage licenses would be issued, which is what happened. Marriage licenses are now being issued in Rowan County, Kentucky, to same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples while Kim Davis is in prison, and Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum and Pat Robertson run around the country claiming, Mike Huckabee says, that this is the beginning of the illegalization of Christianity and the persecution of Christians in the United States of America, which it is not. And proof that it is not is Mike Huckabee is a free man. If we were rounding up Christian conservatives, if we were rounding up opponents of marriage equality and throwing them in jail for opposing marriage equality and being Christians, Mike Huckabee would be in jail. And he ain't. All along, Kim Davis's goal was sweet, sweet bigot money. She says it's about defending traditional marriage. She says it's about the Bible. She says it's about faith and Jesus. But let's look at her own conduct briefly, shall we? Kim Davis, who doesn't think gay couples should be allowed to marry because the Bible, has been married 4 times and divorced 3 times. She was pregnant by her third husband while still married to her first husband. And then she got her second husband to adopt the children that she had by the man who would eventually become her third husband. And then she divorced her third husband and married her fourth husband, who was also her first husband. It's hard to keep track. Kim Davis's family tree is about as Baroque as the Habsburg family tree. You need a flow chart, an Excel spreadsheet, and an abacus to track it. The Bible forbids adultery and divorce. And Kim Davis, despite her sincerely held religious beliefs, never denied herself a divorce, never denied herself a second, third, fourth marriage. All adulterous, according to the Bible that Kim Davis points to when she wants to tell someone else what they are not allowed to do, but doesn't glance at when she's figuring out what she wants to do. And I think Kim Davis is a perfect example of what passes for Christianity in America today, for the pathetic bullshit that passes for Christianity in America today. Because thanks to the efforts of hate groups like the American Family Association, the Family Research Council, the 700 Club, the Moral Majority, the National Organization for Marriage, the National Association of Evangelicals, and frankly, the mousy, near-complicit silence of left-wing and progressive Christians, Christian now is synonymous with anti-gay bigot. To be a good American Christian like Kim Davis or a good Alaskan Christian like Bristol Palin, you don't have to stay in your first marriage. You don't have to stop sitting on the dicks of random men who aren't your husband. You don't have to deny marriage licenses to straight people, in Kim Davis's case, who are remarrying or marrying outside the faith or obtaining marriage licenses for godless secular marriages. No, the only thing you have to do to be a good Christian in America, according to all these right-wing batshit nuts, is hate homos. Hate the homos and you are right with the God of Tony Perkins and Josh Duggar. Hate the homos and you are good. You're in with American Jesus. Toss in support for capital gains tax cuts and American Jesus loves you even more. You don't have to feed the sick. You don't have to clothe the naked. You don't have to house the homeless. You don't have to do any of that shit Jesus actually ever talked about. You just have to hate the homos hard enough to go to jail for your beliefs. No, wait, to cash in on your bigotry, which is what Kim Davis is doing. the people around Kim Davis, the lawyers from the odious theocratic Liberty Council, what they're doing is they're trying to create a radical new definition of religious freedom in this country. That religious freedom does not mean that you are entitled to your own religious beliefs. It means that you are entitled to impose your religious beliefs on others, that you have a right to trample on other people's rights, to overrule them, to interfere with them, if you can point to a sincerely held religious belief as a justification, but only if you're Christian. At the same time the Kim Davis story was dominating the headlines, a Muslim flight attendant was suspended from her job for refusing to serve alcohol on a flight. The Liberty Council did not rush to defend her, sincerely held religious beliefs on her part that people should not drink alcohol. People had no problem looking at that Muslim flight attendant and say, well, if you don't want to serve alcohol, you shouldn't have this job. Same goes for Kim Davis. You don't want to make with the marriage licenses? You shouldn't have this job. You are not forced to be the county clerk. You chose to be the county clerk. If the duties of the county clerk conflict with your beliefs, then don't be the county clerk. If serving alcohol on that flight conflicts with your beliefs, don't be a flight attendant. Religious freedom is this. I don't eat pork. It's against my religion. So I don't work in a place that serves pork. The Liberty Council wants religious freedom to be, I don't eat pork, and I'm going to knock that ham sandwich the fuck out of your mouth if you try to eat one yourself. And I'm going to get a job in a place that serves ham and refuse to serve it so that nobody can have ham because my religion doesn't allow people to eat ham. That ain't religious freedom. That is religious tyranny. That is religious people persecuting other people who are not of their same faith and who are entitled to their own rights to a fucking ham sandwich or a marriage license. What the Liberty Council is after here, this radical redefinition of religious freedom, is about replacing the rule of law with the rule of my imaginary friends versus your imaginary friends versus his imaginary friends. And that's not really going to work. In a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-faith, and within faiths, multi-denominational society, that is a recipe for a war of all against all. That is a recipe for civic chaos. The Kim Davis saga, as I sit here recording, is still unfolding. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out, but I'm certain it's going to play out exactly as I have predicted all along. She's going to be showered in money. There's going to be a ghost-written book, and she is going to go on the poor, persecuted Christian martyr lady speaking circuit for the next few years. And then we are never going to hear from Kim Davis ever again. And personally, I'm looking forward to that blessed day. Your calls after this. Say goodbye to your sore throat, your cold, your allergy symptoms with the oxygen-powered relief of OxyBump. All natural and unique, only OxyBump harnesses the power of oxygen to treat nasal congestion and sore throat. Infused with the finest sourced plant and mineral extracts, OxyBump provides safe, non-addictive relief of congestion, allergies, cold, and sore throat. It's available nationwide at Target. Just look for the brightly colored boxes in the cough, cold, allergy aisle, or go to oxybump.com and enter the code SL20 for 20% off. OxyBump, oxygen-powered relief. When you shop at adamandeve.com, you'll get 10 free gifts with your order, including free shipping. Go to adamandeve.com and enter Savage at checkout. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code DAN when you check out.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Rescue. I've recently become much more poly and been involved in the poly community here in my small, mid-sized, Midwestern town. It's a relatively small community, and a guy who recently entered into it, I've discovered, has been, I see in some really narcissistic, really manipulative ways to, and really hateful ways to a couple of different women who are just starting to compare notes. My question is really this. When you're a member of this kind of a small group, when there's somebody who comes in and starts acting in bad faith, and you've got some empirical evidence and not just the opinions of exes, that this person is acting in really manipulative and toxic ways, do you have any responsibility to talk to the other people in your group or people who, and to kind of give people a heads up that, hey, Bob's a bit of a dick when it comes to this, or, you know, Sally tends to really use people or whatever.
You got to look out for your friends. You got to give your friends a heads up. So you're totally within your rights. I think you are actually responsible. You have a responsibility to say to people, you know, this is happening or this happened or this person did this, particularly when you have hard evidence. It's not just the bitter grousing perhaps of exes, although sometimes exes grouse bitterly because they have grounds, because their ex is their ex because they did shitty things to them. So just because it's coming from an ex doesn't mean it should always be discounted. But if you know that somebody is behaving badly, particularly in a small community that has come together for the purposes of enabling people to be their each other's sex partners. Like one of the things that you're creating when you create a small BDSM community, a small swinger community, small polyamory community, is that accountability, that kind of feedback that makes everybody in that little, presumably to some extent, vetted scene feel safe with the other people in that scene. And if somebody has entered that scene and is abusing people and is taking advantage of the space that has been created there, that little community that has come together to facilitate, whether it's kink or polyamory or swinging or whatever, if somebody enters into that space and takes advantage of it and abuses people, it's almost the way a body responds to a foreign invader or an infectious agent, that you need those white blood cells to kick in. You need that immune system response. And in a small kink community, small poly community, small swinging community, that immune system response is everybody talking to each other and giving each other the heads up. And that person, if they are indeed toxic and shitty, and it's not just the normal push-pull, sturm-drang drama of relationships and hurt feelings, that person needs to be exiled from that community for the safety of others in that community. That's what that community exists partly to do, to facilitate the exiling of those toxic types. So yeah, speak up. Give your friends a heads up. Give them a warning. That's what you are there for. That's why you're in that particular scene. That's what it came together to facilitate, that kind of accountability and that kind of immune system response.
Hey, Dan, just wanted to thank you for your political rants. You keep apologizing for them, but I appreciate them as a source of political education. I think we all know how you feel about the Republican candidate, but I would love to hear your thoughts on the Democratic side. I would appreciate knowing who you support and why.
I'm all in for Martin O'Malley. No, I'm just kidding. I've got a Lincoln Chafee bumper sticker on my car. Haha, no, not him either. I actually will spend a lot more time talking about the R's, because the R's piss me off more than the Democrats. And I tend to talk about what pisses me off. Mike Huckabee, today, you are pissing me off with this, we're rounding up Christians, criminalizing Christianity in America, because they threw Kim Davis in jail, not for being a Christian, not for opposing same-sex marriage. If those were the reasons we were throwing people in jail, Mike Huckabee yourself, you motherfucker, you would be in jail. She's in jail for disobeying a court order. She is in jail for not doing her fucking job, for contempt of court. That is why Kim Davis, as of this recording, is in jail. See, look, I can talk and talk and talk about the Republican candidates and the shit that they are up to and involved in. I have a harder time talking about the Dems because I'm conflicted. If you could see my face right now, you would see me blinking out distress signals, because if I say anything, I'm going to get in trouble at home. My husband was a big Hillary Clinton supporter in 2008, and he was a little miffed that I was an Obama supporter in 2008, and there's nothing Terry hates more than me winning. And so when Obama won, I won, and that still rankles Terry. He loves Obama. We've written checks to Obama that Terry signed, and he voted for Obama happily, but he still carries in his soul a little resentment and grief that his girl Hillary didn't go through in 2008. So I promised him that I would support Hillary this time out as payback, because I want him to keep sucking my dick. And I am blinking the distress signal. That said, if you go to Slog, the Stranger's blog, where I blog as much as I possibly can, you will see posts from a year ago and 6 months ago. I believe that I titled a series of posts, Run, Bernie, Run. And I posted several of Bernie's speeches before he was a candidate. And I'm kind of into everything that Bernie has to say. And I kind of love the way he says it. And, you know, I'm for Hillary, because I want my dick getting sucked when I go home tonight. But I'm not against Bernie. It's almost where I was in 2008. In 2008, when people would ask me if I was supporting Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, I would say, yes, I am for either or both. I would support them both on a ticket, with in either position on that ticket. And I feel like I'm in the same place now. Are you for Hillary Clinton or are you for Bernie Sanders? Yes, I am for either or both. And looking at the Republican field, the Democrats could nominate a broken VHS player, and I'm going to vote for it, over any one of these fucking misogynistic, homophobic, racist fucking douchebags who are running for the Republican nomination right now. Like we do here at the Savage Lovecast, Adam and Eve want you to have the best sex life ever. When you buy something at Adam and Eve, they'll send you a sexy surprise for women, a specially selected toy for men, and a little something that works for anyone. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD and free shipping on your entire order. So what do you have to do to get your 10 free gifts? It's not hard. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new sex toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything else you desire. Enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout and you'll get all 10 free gifts. Go to adamandeve.com today, select one item, and get 10 free gifts, including shipping, when you enter offer code SAVAGE. That's SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 32 male gay. So I was confronted by this guy online, and he said, hey, if you host, I would like to meet up with you and hook up with you, and I will pay you. Since I've been listening to your show, I'm like, okay, all right. Is this a fetish of yours? I'm like, you don't have to pay me. He's only 2 years older than me. Really good looking guy. He's in the closet. I don't really know what else is going on. But anyway, he shows up. I didn't think that he was going to leave money. He ended up leaving money. He wanted the lights off. Couldn't see anything. I did see him. I met him at the front door. And yeah, damn good looking guy. I'm trying to figure out, we did hook up, we wore protection, but we did do oral. So I'm wondering if I mean, of course I should always like be testing myself and stuff if I'm like sexually active, but I'm wondering, what do you think I should do about this situation? Should I continue to see this guy or not? Because I don't know. It just seems like the age difference is, I mean, it's only 2 years apart. I'm kind of confused right now. I'd like some advice.
My first bit of advice, if you're at all concerned about your health and safety, is to get on fucking Truvada. A new study just came out this week that shows, I'm just going to read the headline from the Washington Post. In new study, HIV prevention pill Truvada is 100% effective. Researchers are very startled by this evidence. Half the guys in this study who are on Truvada weren't as conscientious about using condoms as they should have been. Half came down with other sexually transmitted infections, and we should be concerned about those, and we should be using condoms to protect ourselves from gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis as well, not just HIV. But clearly, Truvada is insanely effective at preventing HIV infection if it is 100% effective, even when half the guys in the study came down with other sexually transmitted infections. If you're at all concerned about oral when it comes to HIV, or this kind of nearly anonymous hookup when it comes to HIV, get on fucking Truvada. This is no longer a subject of debate. This is now empirical fact. This is now science. You should be on Truvada. Okay, so what's up with this guy? I think you hit the nail on the head. This must be a fetish or control thing for him, a kink, that there's something about leaving the money, about not having to pay you with affection or consideration, and being in the power position, perhaps. You know, so many kinks, when you boil them down to their essence, there's some sort of power play at work, and leaving you that money, perhaps it just makes him feel more in control of the sex. Perhaps it makes him feel like he can walk away without looking back because he doesn't have to pay you with dinner or niceness or a movie or questions about your day. He's going to pay you with cash and turn on his heel after he drains his sack and go. If you want to hook up with him again and it was fun and he was otherwise respectful and didn't take advantage of you, didn't attempt to leverage the power that comes with paying you into trying to force you to do anything that you were not comfortable with, I don't see why you wouldn't want to hook up with this guy again. If you asked him, is this a fetish, is this a kink, and he didn't answer, maybe that being made explicit that for him this is just play at paying, kind of drains it for him, makes it less exciting, less sexy. And so perhaps for his kink to fire on all cylinders, he needs to not have that explicitly stated. He doesn't want that on the table. But if you feel safe, and if he's hot, and if it's sexy, and if you want the money, and you don't feel diminished by it, enjoy. Have you tried to solve your allergy and cold woes with various saline solutions and over-the-counter medications, but none of them work? Maybe it's time you tried OxyBump. All natural and unique, only OxyBump harnesses the power of oxygen to treat nasal congestion and sore throat. Infused with the finest sourced plant and mineral extracts, OxyBump provides safe, non-addictive relief of congestion, allergies, cold, and sore throat. It's tasteless, pH neutral, and won't cause post-nasal drip. It's available nationwide at Target. Just look for the brightly colored boxes in the cough, cold, allergy aisle, or go to OxyBump.com and enter code SL20 for 20% off. OxyBump. Oxygen-powered relief.
Hey, I am a 20-something college student. I consider myself kind of bisexual. I have a problem with a roommate. She has told me that she's lesbian, which I'm totally fine with. And to be clear, we don't share rooms, but we share a bathroom. And you can easily get between rooms. Well, yesterday, she walked in my room completely naked, sat on my bed, and tried to touch me. And I kind of just laughed because I felt really uncomfortable, and she laughed and left. And this whole time, she's been very, like, comfortable with being naked in the bathroom, and it's not a big deal. But I'm really struggling with how to create boundaries without making her hate me because I have to live with this person for the next year. Any advice would be great. She's also mentioned that people, like, you know, are homophobes and stuff like that, and I don't want to come across that way. But at the same time, I feel like there's a reasonable expectation to not have another girl naked on my bed.
Stop being nice. Stop being nice to your manipulative, creepy roommate. Let's pretend that this is a guy. Let's pretend that this is a cisgendered heterosexual male who strolled around your apartment naked, knowing that, let's pretend that you're a lesbian, that you would never in a million years want to sleep with this person, and he strolls around your apartment naked and then one day enters your bedroom and sits on your bed naked and touches you. Would you have laughed that off? Maybe. There's a lot of women are socialized to be deferential, to sometimes dump lubricant all over the grinding gears of an incredibly awkward or abusive or manipulative social situation to keep everybody happy and to just sort of jolly everything along. And you need to rip that out of your motherboard. You need to not do that. When she walked into your room naked, you needed to say, get out of my room. What are you doing? When she sat down on your bed, please, you're making me uncomfortable. Leave my room. Go put some clothes on. This is not okay with me. Period. The end. You need to establish boundaries, and you can't, as a sensitive, hand-wringy, straight ally of the LGBT community, allow yourself to be exploited by the occasional very shitty LGBT person who will use that pressure point to manipulate you. I don't want her to think I'm homophobic, so I am going to give her a pass to do something that I would not give a heterosexual a pass to do. Do you see what's happening there? Do you see how vulnerable you are in the face of that? If you're so concerned with her accusing you of being homophobic that you don't defend yourself, that you can't establish clear boundaries, that you can't even have boundaries, lest you be accused of being homophobic by your boundaryless, naked, lesbian, creepo roommate. No. Boundaries. Makes me uncomfortable when you walk around the apartment naked, but you know what? Shared spaces you can walk around naked. Makes me uncomfortable. Stay the fuck out of my room. When you're naked, not a shared space. Stay the fuck off my bed. Not a shared space. Keep your hands off me when I'm in bed and you're naked in my bed, which you shouldn't be, in my room where you shouldn't be. And if she freaks out and accuses you of being a homophobe, you look at her and say, I would be saying all of this, the exact same things, if you were straight. And I assume, Rumi, you would be saying the exact same things as a lesbian woman, if your straight male roommate pulled this shit on you. Stand up for yourself. Addendum, epilogue, postscript. Maybe I'm going too nuclear right off the top, too confrontational, screaming and yelling. Maybe she's just fairy. Maybe she's just nudisty. Perhaps your first line of attack should be to say, ha ha, laugh, go ahead, laugh some more, but then say, are all lesbians like this? Or I didn't realize that I got a roommate off nudist.com, or do I need to get a lock on my door? Because when I'm alone, I'd like to be alone. And then see what she says. Maybe she just doesn't get it, and maybe she doesn't need you to go postal on her. She just needs you to laughingly and in a friendly way make it clear what your boundaries and expectations are. And then if she continues to violate them, you can go postal. Me, I'd go postal out of the gate. We're going to pause here for a second so I can give a shout out to our friends at Harry's.com. Harry's is fixing a problem many of us have, paying too much for overpriced razors. Let's admit, shaving with a dull blade isn't fun. Sometimes we cut or scrape ourselves with dull blades and draw blood. Razors are expensive. They run about $4 a blade, which is why some of us are using dull blades and reusing dull blades. And a guy who shaves every day can spend hundreds of dollars a year just on razors if you want sharp blades all the time. And when we go to the store to buy razors, we sometimes have to deal with those pesky locked up plexiglass cabinets. But Harry's gives us high quality razors at about half the price of those big brand blades. They make their razors in their own factory in Germany, and they're well engineered for sharpness and high performance. And Harry ships them for free to your front doorstep. And because they make and ship their own blades, Harry's is a more efficient company, which means they can give us factory direct pricing. The Starter Truman Set is an amazing deal. A razor handle with a great look and feel, three razor blades, and a choice of either shave cream or foaming shave gel. You get all of this for just $15. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase with coupon code DAN. That's HARRYS.com and enter the code DAN at checkout. We've talked a lot on the podcast over the years about decriminalizing sex work. I am pro decriminalization, just laying my cards on the table. And this conversation was kicked back into gear recently by Amnesty International's recent decision to call for the decriminalization of sex work. Herman Lopez is a staff writer for Vox, the Explain the News news site founded by Ezra Klein. Lopez was inspired by the debate over Amnesty International's recent move to look at all the evidence for banning sex work, and he joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Hey, Herman, thanks for jumping on the phone.
No problem. Glad to join you.
So that's what you guys do at Vox. You look at the data, you look at the research, so you dug into it, and what did you find?
Well, I basically found two things. One, that the research on decriminalization and legalizing prostitution, the findings that are the best, like the best research done, is very positive. It shows like a drop in STDs, a drop in public health problems, a drop in rapes in some cases. Like in Rhode Island, they did a big study looking at when the state accidentally decriminalized prostitution, indoor prostitution.
Wait, how did the state of Rhode Island accidentally decriminalize indoor prostitution?
It's kind of complicated, but in the 1980s, they changed the law, and until the 2000s, the courts didn't interpret the law to find that it actually decriminalized prostitution. And then they took about 5 or 6 years to actually fix it. So for 5 or 6 years, it was decriminalized, even though that's not what legislators said they intended.
And so that, for me, that was one of the most fascinating parts of your piece. So there's this brief window in Rhode Island where indoor prostitution was decriminalized, it was legal, and there was a big drop in rape cases in Rhode Island during that time, 39% drop in reports of sexual abuse and rape. And then that was mirrored, you write later in the piece, in Holland, where there was a 30 to 40% drop in cases of sexual abuse and rape when sex work was decriminalized there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's the most interesting is like in policy debate, it's one of the hardest things, like getting like a random actual, like a random policy situation, because you don't want to inflict random policy on like actual people. That would obviously be unethical. But in Rhode Island, that's basically what happened. So it's like a very close to random trial, and they got really promising results.
This flies in the face of, and can be a very explosive thing to suggest to anyone. You know, the argument is, or what we're all supposed to ascribe to, is that rape is about power, not about sex. But what we saw in Rhode Island, what we've seen in Holland, what we've seen in New Zealand, other places that have decriminalized sex work, is that when there is access to sex workers and it is decriminalized, that rape cases fall. So for some people, perhaps rape is about power, but for others, it seems that rape is about sex and access, and that if there is a route for people who might not be able to get laid otherwise. They're more likely to buy or less likely to rape if there is legal prostitution. And this is really hard to talk about for someone like me who's got a lot of friends who are sex workers. I don't want to say, hey, sociopaths and rapists, go visit my friends instead.
Yeah.
But that does seem to be what's happened.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also suggested, it's very troubling, obviously, but it's also suggested in other research that has looked at the effect of, like, porn on rape, and it does seem like, not as much as, like, the 39% drop in Rhode Island, but it does have some decreasing effect on rape cases.
Those are the studies that have shown that as different states, internet pornography became more widely available, as states came online, rape and sexual assault dropped state by state as different states came online. Which showed that some people who had been out raping were at home masturbating now because they had access to these kinds of images.
That's exactly right.
It puts people who, you know, believe rape is only about power or that porn is the theory, rape is the practice, into a difficult position because the empirical data would seem to suggest that rape isn't necessarily about power and that porn is not theory, rape is not the practice. What else did you find? You know, the major argument that people make against decriminalizing sex work internationally or even in a locality is that sex trafficking will explode, that people will be coerced or moved across the world and forced into prostitution against their will. Did you find that there was research backing that up? Was there any evidence for that argument?
No, and that's actually what most surprised me. I looked at the study cited by the letter that a bunch of celebrities sent to Amnesty telling them to, like, oppose decriminalization. And the biggest study cited in there, which is usually the biggest study thrown out there, was, like, really just very shoddy research. I talked to a researcher about it, and he said that the data was just not reliable. And then I talked to the researchers who actually did this study, and they told me that, yeah, the data they used isn't very reliable, but it's the best they have. For example, they said that it doesn't actually measure the flows of human trafficking, which if you're looking at how much human trafficking there is, if you don't know the actual flows, like how many people are actually being trafficked, then you don't really know what you're looking at all. Like there's no really good data to find anything conclusive in there.
Did you have a position on decriminalization when you first began to dig into the research and the data?
No, not really. I mean, I knew both sides of the debate, but until I started actually looking at this, I didn't have any strong positions. And when I looked at it, I saw that this data was just so bad, that the research was so bad on the anti-decriminalization side, and that the research was so good on the pro-decriminalization side that it changed my mind.
Was the research on the pro-decriminalization side biased? Is that why it was showing evidence that we should decriminalize?
There's no sign of that happening. The researchers that did like the Netherlands study and then the Rhode Island study, they were completely unaware of each other's like existence or anything like that. They were both conducting these studies simultaneously. Yet they found basically the exact same things with STDs and rape cases dropping.
Mm-hmm.
So that suggests to me that no, there's not really any bias there, that they just happened to find good results and they're very similar.
Why? It seems to me that there is a bias out there in favor of research that tells everybody what we wish was, you know, tells most people what they wish was true about sex work. That, you know, our anti-sex work, sex-phobic bias causes people not to examine closely the data because the data isn't going to bear out the bias around sex work, that it's terrible and should be criminalized for the protection of sex workers themselves. And how do you push back against that when it's not that there's a bias in the data, but there's a bias in most people as they approach the data and they will look at the data, you know, that confirmation bias bullshit. They'll look at the stuff that supports the position they came with, and they're going to discount any evidence to the contrary because they can't let go of their own biases, their positions.
That's actually one thing that, like, if you're a researcher and you're looking at, like, the human trafficking data, and, like, the study I mentioned earlier, like, the big anti-decriminalization study, it uses a UN data source that basically tells you not to use it to make sweeping conclusions because the data, like, it admits, the UN source just admits that it's too bad of data. And yet people use it anyway, and that, like, leads me to believe that these researchers went in there wanting to find something. I'm not sure if they wanted to find something anti-decriminalization, but they wanted to find something, and so they just kept going on with this data that just wasn't good.
Herman Lopez, he writes for Vox. The piece is called "I Looked at the Best Evidence for Banning Prostitution. It's Absolutely Terrible." And you can find it at Vox.com. And you should be following him on Twitter, as I am now, at Herman R. Lopez. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone today.
All right. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 48-year-old woman, and I recently had to break up a relationship with a order of protection, a restraining order. It was an almost three-year cyclical DV, break up, get back together again, break up, get back together again. It finally ended in a horrible way with me going to the court to get an order of protection. Fast forward about 6 weeks, and a friend of mine told me that she wanted to hook me up with her brother, and we went out on a date and had a really nice time. And I'd like to really go slow, and I'd really like to get to know him and see how it goes. Anyways, do I need to tell him that I have an order of protection against this guy? Whenever I have tried to break up with the guy I have the order against, he always goes bananas, psycho bananas, whenever there's any hint that I've dated anybody, been with anybody, just psycho. So he's been good about staying away, haven't made any contact, but I'm just not really sure if I need to tell this new guy about the crazy old guy that there's an order of protection against.
I do think you should tell the new guy about the crazy old guy. What you shouldn't do is tell the crazy old guy about the crazy new guy. I'm sorry that you're going through this. You rushed past DV. You mentioned that there was DV, domestic violence. I am sorry that you were abused at the hands of this crazy person. And I'm sorry that that obligates you in a way to give a heads up to this new person. It really does, because if you think that there's a chance that this crazy person may come after your new boyfriend, if indeed you become girlfriend-boyfriend, that may be information that he's entitled to. That may be information that you would want to share with him, even if you didn't feel he's entitled to it, because if you cared about him, you wouldn't want to see him harmed. You would want to give him that heads up, that warning that there's this crazy person rattling around out there. Might be a good idea, and I hate this, right? You ended an abusive relationship, you got a restraining order, you were the victim of some form of domestic violence, and it's terrible that he gets to run around in the world and you have to play defense. But it may be a good idea for you not to put all over social media pictures on Instagram or Twitter or your Facebook profile images of your new boyfriend or images of you with your new boyfriend or links to your new boyfriend's accounts or anything until this guy is well and thoroughly out of your life and over you. And I hope that he is well and thoroughly out of your life and over you soon so that you don't have to weigh your choices and your actions and what you have to tell to someone that you're dating now so that you don't have to continue to weigh what you're doing and who you're with and what your online presence is against the potential threat that this guy, your ex, represents. I'm sorry that you're in this position. And I do think that you really ought to give this guy, your friend's brother, a heads up. And this is one of those cases. This is one of those instances where you're going to tell somebody one thing about you, and they're going to tell you in their response a whole lot about them. It's like telling somebody you have HIV, telling someone you have a kink, telling someone you're poly, one thing about you. Their reaction can tell you everything that you need to know about them. If he freaks out, if he blames you, if he responds with anything other than concern, if he regards you as anything other than the victim here, he's told you a lot, including that you really shouldn't be dating him either.
Hey, Dan, I have a question about dating etiquette. I was listening to episode 89, and a caller who went out on a date with a guy decided she wasn't interested in him after the date, but didn't tell him. I think you gave great advice on this. She ignored his relentless attempts to contact her. You told her to just, if she wasn't interested, just tell him. And I think that's what girls should do. But it also sounded like he paid for dinner. So I was wondering, if a girl wasn't interested in a guy, should she allow him to pay for dinner? Is that good dating etiquette?
I don't know if it's good dating etiquette, but it might be good sense, considering that so many straight men seem to think that a woman who's allowed them to pay for dinner is obligated to fuck them. A woman can sidestep that sense of entitlement by not allowing him to pay for dinner if she isn't interested or if she isn't sure yet that she's interested or not. However, the convention is that if somebody has asked somebody out on a formal date, that that person is going to pick up the tab, that it's on them. I'm asking you out to dinner, on me. That is the social convention. And if at the end of the meal, she's determined that this is somebody she would never want to fuck and doesn't want to see again, she could speak up. She could insist on paying half the bill. And then men would be angry about that too. Right? Then she's a bitch because she's basically dumping him by putting her credit card down on the check at the same time. And that just seems cruel. And as with most dating etiquette rules about how women are supposed to behave, how women are supposed to interact with men and treat them, it just seems like there's no win here. It's a lose, 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 lose scenario constantly for her. If she lets him pay, she has to fuck him. If she lets him pay, she's telling him that she wants to fuck him or even wants to see him again. If she refuses to let him pay, then she's a castrating bitch who embarrassed and humiliated him at the end of the meal. I don't think she can win. So I think what we have to go with here is the person who made the invitation pays because of the conventions, the gendered conventions of heterosexual romance. It's almost always the man who asks, who makes the invite. And so it's almost always going to be the man who pays. And then she gets to decide if she wants to see him again. And I think in our more egalitarian world that there should be a taking of turns. That if he asked her out and he paid the first time and she wants to see him again, even if he asks her out the second time, I think it's a good idea if she picks up the check the second time. But what do I know? I'm a feminist.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about my husband and me. So we're both in our 30s. And he really likes tickling me. And I don't know if it's like a flirting thing that, because it like starts off kind of innocently and then he really gets going. But for whatever reason, he really likes it. It's like the best sex we have for him, I think, comes after he's started tickling me. The problem is I don't like being tickled very much. It's borderline squigs me out a little bit. This tickling that he gets so into, and I kind of don't know what to do because I could never do it again and I would be happy, but he really likes it. Like the sounds he's making, and this is like, they don't come any other time. He's really into it. So is this a case where I am a good wife who loves him very much and loves him having awesome sex, and so we'll kind of take a deep breath and put up with it every once in a while? Or do I say something? I know him, and I know that if I talked about it, even in a way that would be like, maybe we can ease up on this thing, that would be it. It would kill it. So I don't think there's a great medium between me bringing it up and it never happening again, or me just kind of doing it. So I'm wondering what you think.
This isn't a flirting thing. And it's not a coincidence that you guys have the best sex we have. I'm quoting you, the best sex we have for him. You quickly qualified that. It's the best sex we have for him, which means it's not the best sex for you, because the prologue is this unpleasant for you tickling scene. But it ain't a flirting thing. It's a fetish thing. It's a full-blown kink. Google it, tickling fetish. It's actually a thing. And it's for someone who doesn't enjoy being on the receiving end of it, it's going to be, can be an unpleasant thing, a really unpleasant thing. There are people out there who have biting fetishes, spanking fetishes, and it behooves them to find partners who share those fetishes. Because if you're really into intense spanking or intense tickling, that's not something that a GGG partner can necessarily do for you without really signing up for sex that is for them unpleasant, sex that they will come to dread over time. All that said, there's this gay couple I actually met in Denver, Colorado. Young gay couple, cute gay couple. One of them was a tickling fetish. The other wasn't. They came up to me at an event. I gave them advice and I heard back from them a year later that it fucking worked. So I'm going to give it to you, which was they had 4 poker chips and they were on the nightstand on the side of the bed of the tickle fetish dude. And when they had tickle sex, one of those poker chips went on to the other nightstand. And he had 4. So there could be 4 tickle things happening in 1 month. At the end of the month, the chits went back. If in that month's time, all four chits didn't move over, those points didn't roll over like some digital phone plan. That he had four chances that month if he used them up, no more chances that month if he didn't use them up. That didn't mean he got to tickle eight times in the next month. And it worked for them because it put a lid on it. It put a cap on it. It also made it kind of a playful game and an acknowledgement that this was something that the non-tickle fetish partner was willing to do in a limited way and occasionally for the other partner's pleasure, for the tickle fetish partner's pleasure, but not something that the non-tickle guy would have to do every time they fucking had sex, right? So there was a limit. It, however, they could only arrive at this kind of workable solution with the poker chips flying back and forth because they acknowledged, they could acknowledge to each other that this was your thing that you enjoy very much, but it's not my thing and it's not a thing that I enjoy as much or really at all. But I enjoy your enjoyment and I'm willing to go there for you. I'm willing to indulge, willing to be GGG. I'm concerned about how you fix this problem in your sex life if you're married to someone that you can't give feedback to about what works for you and what doesn't work for you. That's not a sex life. That's kind of a hostage situation. If your husband has presented his erotics, his sex life, his ability to be sexual or enjoy sex framed around any criticism, any feedback that isn't 100% affirming is going to ruin it for me, whatever it is. That puts you under a lot of pressure to do things you might not enjoy, to endure, to put up with. And you shouldn't have to do that. You're allowed to have tastes and preferences. You're allowed to like some things more than you like other things. You can assure him that tickling you can take every once in a while, and you really love the sex you guys have in the wake of the tickling, so there's something in it for you in the end. But you shouldn't have to tell him, you shouldn't have to let him think that the tickling itself is something that you love. If it's not something that leaves you traumatized, if it's not something that induces symptoms of PTSD, if it's not triggering for you, you can go there. You can do that for him. You shouldn't do it if it's any of those things that I just rattled off. But he should know that he's being indulged, just like the spanking fetishist whose partner can take or leave spanking and lets them spank them every once in a while and maybe gets into it because their partner's so excited. But if they weren't with the spanking fetishist, they would not be into spanking, not be doing spanking, not be getting spanked in an erotic context ever. And the partner, the spanking fetishist in that case, should be up for that, should be grateful for that. And should, instead of thinking, oh, I'm spanking them and they don't really like spanking, be thinking, I'm spanking them and it turns me on and they're turned on by how turned on I am by what we're doing. And that's the trick your husband needs to play in his head if you agree to do this. You have to say, though, you have to be able to give him feedback. You have to be able to tell him that his tickling fetish is his. The sex you have after is yours, too, and you love it. And I think you need to put that on the table and you need to say that because you don't want this to spread. You don't want what is right now an occasional thing to become something that he needs and relies on every time you have sex. And the time to give him that kind of feedback is before that happens, is now. So talk to the husband, maybe get the poker chips and say, not all of your things are going to be all my things and vice versa, but I want to indulge you in your things. But can't do this thing every single time. And you shouldn't say that to him as if he is doing it every single time, because he's not. But you want to get out in front of that. So feedback. Talk, talk, talk. And if it ruins it for him, that's his problem. Because you're willing to go there with him, for him, and for the sex you have after it. But if he's so insecure, immature, that you putting it out there that tickling isn't your favorite thing ruins tickling for him, then he deserves to have tickling ruined for him.
Hi, this is a comment about the woman on your last episode who talked about problems with anal sex. So she started off by saying that her boyfriend performed anal sex on her without any kind of notice. And I want to make something really explicit about this, that this is a description of rape. And I'm not saying that consent always needs to be verbal, but there has to be some kind of communication or understanding that makes it clear that your partner wants to do what you want to do. And there are actually a lot of nonverbal ways to do this also. but this woman didn't have any opportunity to either agree or disagree with what was about to be done to her. And that's not okay. I think it's important that sexual violence needs to be recognized for what it is and not just kind of glossed over as some kind of misunderstanding.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the 23-year-old woman from episode 462 who was asking about anal. Your call made me so incredibly sad and reminded me of a similar time in my life when I was younger. You told Dan that he couldn't say, "dump that motherfucking asshole," but you didn't restrict us listeners. Your boyfriend's behavior is abusive, and him slipping it in your ass without warning is non-consensual and straight-up assault. A loving partner would never treat you in this hurtful and abusive manner. So now I'll say it. Dump that motherfucking asshole. Get rid of him, and you'll find a kind, hot, and respectful man who makes you feel great, and you can enjoy a consensual and satisfying sex life with. I dumped the motherfucker in my life 3 years ago, and am now engaged to the man of my dreams who respects and adores me. You can do the same. Take care of yourself and dump the abusive asshole.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about episode 462 and the woman with the boyfriend who anally assaulted her. I wanted to tell her that I, too, used to experience stomach aches while trying anal sex. However, different positions and different things, masturbation while doing anal led to a pleasurable thing with a partner that I trusted. And I think she should get a partner that she trusts and keep trying and see if maybe she won't feel sick anymore. And she needs to dump that motherfucker already.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you have a question or comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Germán López on Twitter at GermanRLopez. That's Germán R. López. Follow Dirk Kaber on Twitter at Dirk Kaber. Speaking of Twitter, Aaron Haley tweets, "I really want to get my mom to listen to Savage Lovecast on the regular. Hashtag life goals." Aaron's mom, if you're now a listener, welcome to the Savage Lovecast. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Rescue and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for having me.